People are ready for hair that doesn't look like it was cut with a lawnmower, and workouts that don't involve two bags of flour. They're ready for a grand reopening, for small businesses to do what they've always done, get out there and power an economy. And Spectrum Business is proud to help with internet, voice, and TV services for free for 1 month when you switch. At Spectrum Business, we're here for you because you're here for all of us. Visit business.spectrum.com/reopen to learn more. Restrictions apply. Call for details. People are ready for hair that doesn't look like it was cut with a lawnmower, and workouts that don't involve two bags of flour. They're ready for a grand reopening, for small businesses to do what they've always done, get out there and power an economy. And Spectrum Business is proud to help with internet, voice, and TV services for free for 1 month when you switch. At Spectrum Business, we're here for you because you're here for all of us. Visit business.spectrum.com/reopen to learn more. Restrictions apply. Call for details.
It was just 5 years ago when KC turned blue, and we were treated to one of the best months in our city's history.
Play ball! Kane around second, on his way to third. He's going to try to score. Here he comes. Throw, not in time.
Ground ball third.
Moustakas has got it. To first. Royals win it.
Kane swings, line drive, left center field. Orlando scores. Escobar scores. Zobrist scores. Lorenzo Kane drives in three, and the Royals have five in the 12th inning.
And the first pitch, swinging as he always does, fly ball left center, and it is going to drop and roll away. And Escobar may circle the bases. He's rounding third. Here he comes, 1-0 Royals.
Familia's next pitch, belted to deep center, and gone, Alex Gordon. He didn't need the win.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
Now it's time to look back and talk with the guys who made it happen. It's the Royals' five-year reunion on Fesco in the Morning.
First base coach Rusty Koontz joining us on today's edition of the five-year reunion. And it started with the end of 14. He says the post-World Series was tough on everyone.
When it was all said and done, there wasn't a dry eye in the locker room because it was like somebody had stolen something from them, and it was called a World Series trophy. Because in their mind, they thought for sure we were the best team in baseball at that time, and there's no way that the San Francisco Giants should have beat us. And unfortunately, they did. They did a hell of a job. But they didn't forget about that going into the off season, and that whole off season, the talk was, okay, we got to get back there and we got to take what is ours. And they came with a chip in spring training. I just remember to a player, everybody that experienced 2014 postseason in the World Series came with a chip. I mean, from day one, they were focused, they were locked in, they were, you know, they were driven, and it was like, okay, we're going to prove to everybody we are the best team, and we're going to go take what's ours. And, man, when you get a ball club from the very beginning with that kind of a mindset, man, it sure makes it easy to be a coach.
No doubt about it. And the rest of the league really didn't like a Royals team that was fired up and chippy and kind of believing in themselves. It seemed like every turn, every step of the way, there was another team there that kind of wanted to scuffle with you guys and get into fights and start some stuff on the field with you.
And some of the players that, you know, had been to a postseason or whatever, you know, and then some of the veteran guys like George Brett, you know, he had a hand in it too. He goes, look, when you go to the World Series, you know, regardless of whether you win it or you lose it, when you go to the World Series the next year, you got a target on your back, because if you're going to be the best, everybody wants to beat the best. And, boy, I'll tell you what, they were spot on, the ones that had been through it before, because I'll tell you what, we kind of snuck up on some teams in 14, and when we hit the ground running in 2015, everybody wanted to beat us because we went to the World Series. And you could see a different intensity in the games that we played right from the get. And you're absolutely right. I mean, it started getting chippy. You know, people, you know, the players on our club with knowing that, you know, they had that little motivation to get back and win a World Series trophy. And the way we went about our business, I mean, it wasn't the love you mean it Kansas City Royals anymore. These guys brought a lunchbox and a hard hat to work, and you were in for a full nine innings every time we played. So we didn't, we never folded, we never gave an out away, and it every game was a grind because whoever you were playing came to beat you. And I'll tell you what, it was a great time because our players got tougher. And as the season went on, they became more of a unit because they started protecting one another. And I'll tell you what, it was a lot of fun to be a part of and a lot of fun to see, for sure.
What were some of the conversations like maybe you overheard from some of the other guys when you're out there coaching first base from some of the other teams? Like, what were some of the things that they were kind of saying about you guys in 2015?
Well, most of it was like, what happened? What happened? I mean, all of a sudden, you guys are the monster of the Midway or whatever. You know, it's like, man, you got a different look about your club. You got a different feel about your club. I mean, what is it? And I said, well, I'm not sure, but I'll tell you what. When you get into postseason and you go through those kind of battles and you come up short, you know, you get that fire in your belly, and you got a whole different purpose and a whole different mentality when you play these games. It's just the way it is, and if you don't win the whole thing, you come back with that inside of you, and it's like, yeah, these guys aren't the love Kansas City Royals that we were in the past, where everybody loved to play us because we had great guys, we had great players, we had our personality of our club was, you know, it was nice first, you know, and now all of a sudden we're getting into it, and all of a sudden the guys that we played for a long, long time, they go, man, you guys flipped the switch. And because, you know, other teams know, other players know, when you come to battle, when you come to war, there's a whole different edge to it. And that's pretty much the conversations that I had with all the first basemen and I just remember, you know, guys like Miggy Cabrera at first base or something turning around and saying to me, you know, it's like, you guys really want this, don't you? And I go, yeah, Miggy, it was almost like it was stolen away from, and now we got to go get it, you know. And he goes, yeah, you can tell you guys are playing hard. You're playing the game right. You're doing everything that championship type of players play like, you know. And so it was nice to hear some of the things that other teams had to say about our club at that time, because they knew that we were on a mission and they knew that we were coming every single game. It was going to be a war.
This team chemistry, if everybody could do it, you'd craft it right away. But this team obviously had that chemistry. And then how did the coaching staff kind of accentuate what the clubhouse had to make it, I guess, maybe that dynamic where you mentioned that they were able to flip the switch?
The best thing about the whole thing for me in that is that Ned, at that time in his coaching, you know, managing career, and he had been, you know, he knew nothing else but postseason. You know, when he was a coach with the Atlanta Braves, you know, they went like 14 years in a row. So, you know, he knew what it was going to be like. He knew from just personal experience what it was going to take, what we're going to have to do with this club, how we're going to bring them together, how we're going to keep them locked in and focused and motivated, and all those things that you have to have if you're going to be a winning club. But Ned had been through all of that, you know, and the good, the bad, the ugly. But he'd always been through it. And then when he went over to Milwaukee, he would, you know, he went through it there as well. So, you know, it all starts with the leadership part. And Ned had been there, done that. So he was a great influence on us as far as the coaching staff, because, okay, here's the red flags. Here's what you're going to have to watch out for. These are the things that, you know, could possibly go south. You know, this is where we have to be, and this is what we have to do on a daily basis to keep these guys going in the right direction. And he did a great job in those 2 years in 14 and 15 about leading us and helping us keep on point as far as what we needed to do as coaches and how we needed to present our areas to our players. And he had a few meetings, not a lot of meetings, but he had a few meetings when we were starting to roll, and the timing of them were perfect. And, he just developed a culture in that locker room where, you guys are the best. You've been there. You've done that. You've been through it. You haven't won it yet. So don't ever take your eye off the prize. At the end of the year, you want to stand there with a World Series trophy in your hand. So if you get off track, if you go into a slump offensively, if you're struggling on the mound or whatever it is, close your eyes, look at that trophy. It's yours. It's what we want to accomplish. And God, he was spot on with all of it. And it really helped keep guys in focus and keep them online, because personality of the club, they loved one another. I mean, they absolutely loved one another as a team. And, with Ned and then Dayton Moore putting that club together the way he did and getting the personalities that would mesh, I mean, it was a coach's dream to come to the locker room every day and get on the field, because these guys worked their butts off, but they were so encouraging to one another, and they truly had a love for one another, and it just all clicked, and that's what has to happen.
You know, we talked to Ned every week during that season. We talked to Ned every week for many seasons, but we never really got like a good, like, behind the scenes Ned story. Like, what's your favorite Ned story from behind the scenes in 2015?
Well, Ned was always great about, in for especially us, he'd come to the coach's room and, okay, what's the game plan? And the best thing about what he did, he allowed coaches to coach. He didn't try to come in with all the answers. Okay, we need to do this, we need to do that, yada, yada, yada. He allowed his coaches to come up with a game plan, run it by him. He gave you a couple of minutes of what he thought about it, yay, nay, whatever. But so many times, if you had 100 ideas, he went along with them 99 times out of the 100. He might have an opinion about something else, but he allowed you to be creative. He allowed you to structure your day and motivate your group of players. Obviously I had the outfielders and the base runners and the bunters and those kind of guys. But, if I'd run something about, hey, what do you think about this today? We're doing these drills. What do you think on that? And he'd give an honest opinion. I love it, or maybe try this or whatever it is. But he allowed you to coach, and he made you think, and he didn't try to come up with all the answers. And that's all you really want at that level as a big league coach. You just want a manager that has your back, that wants to keep you engaged in part of the process of how this is going to work. And behind the scenes, he was like a father to you. He was like that mentor. He if he found a hiccup, he'd mention it. If not, that was the greatest idea in the world, And so he made you feel like $1 million. And I think a lot of that came from back when he was a coach with Bobby Cox. And you hear story after story after story about how Bobby Cox allowed coaches to coach. And if there was a hiccup or a mistake or something like that, he never scolded, he never degraded, he just encouraged you. I would have done the same thing, that kind of an approach. So I think a lot of the things that the carryover for Ned when he went from a coach with that kind of a manager, when he became a manager, that's the kind of manager that he helped us with when we were coaches. It was great. It was a great atmosphere and a great spot to be in, and the timing was perfect for me, because that's exactly the kind of manager I needed. I kind of had an idea of what I wanted to do, but I wanted to make sure that I got the okay by the guys that Because at the end of the day, if you think about it as a coach, you can come up with all the greatest ideas in the world, and if none of them work, nobody really knows that it was your ideas, because at the end of the day, the manager has to take the microphone in front of the media and try to explain what the hell you just did. And there were so many times. I mean, you know, as good as you want it to be, there were so many times where I tried something and it was horrible. And it was great. Ned would come in before he would have to do his media mic thing at the end of the day. And he would actually walk in and go, okay, what do you want me to say about that? Because it was so bad. And I would say, just tell him that, yeah, I thought it would work. I throw me under the bus, whatever it is. And he would never do it.
No.
He would never say, I don't know what the hell Rusty was thinking or why he sent that guy or why we didn't throw to home or whatever. But he would never throw me under the bus. But he would always come in and go, okay, what do you want me to say? Because he had no idea what the hell I was doing. But those are things that people don't see. But, oh, my God, they're worth $1 million to a coach when you have a great manager like that that just backs you. You know, he says, well,
yeah,
sometimes it's going to work, sometimes it's not going to work, you know.
Well, I think also, though, you're tied to two of the most important plays. Kane scoring from first and the mad dash home by Eric Hosmer. As the base running guy and the scout guy and all that kind of stuff, which one are you more proud of, the mad dash home or Kane scoring from first?
Well, I think you got to give all the credit to the scouts for one thing. The advanced scouts, they see everything before you even show up to town. So, I mean, Alex Zumwalt, he was our advanced scout, man. I mean, in 14 and 15, he put all this stuff together, and he was spot on. And he did a great job as far as trying to find little nuggets, and as well as all of our other scouts that were rolling on at that time, because there were certain little things that we could see and certain little things that we knew about. But, you know, and one of them, you know, the mad dash for Haas, you know, trying to take advantage of, you know, that moment. But, man, you can write that up on a chalkboard all day long if you want to. But you got to have the player to have enough sack to go, you know what, it's time and I'm going to try it. And my gosh, because it was a great situation for him, and he did exactly what we were trying to get done right there. And kudos to Haas. I mean, it was the moment that we needed and the run that we needed, obviously, because the momentum just started kicking off right there. But I'll tell you about the Lorenzo Kane one, though. It was Mike Jersley, the third base coach, that in 2014, Lo Kane was at first, and somebody hit a little bloop single into left center field, and the left fielder was the, I'm trying to think of what his name was. He came in, but Lo Kane checked up coming into third, meaning he slowed down coming into third base. Well, the ball hit, and it kicked off his glove just a little bit to the right. But because Lo Kane had tippy-toed in the third and actually had stopped, Jersh couldn't send him on the little kick. And at the end of the day, we went through that play. And so the entire 2015 season, we were looking at what we now refer to as the Batista play. But at that time, it was like And when we went back to spring training, every time we hit a double, we rounded second base looking for a triple. Every time we went first to third, we rounded third looking to score. Take that extra 90 feet. And it was actually Mike Jersley that just kept pressing it and saying that, look, if we get that long single in the outfield, if you guys are coming hard to me in the third base and something happens behind you, I'm going to score you. And he was the best I've ever seen at doing that. And so we get into the playoffs against Toronto, and that ball down the right field line, and Jose goes over, he cuts it off, he does a reverse turn, he throws it to second base, but Jersh in knowing there's no cutoff man, and he's got Kane coming hard in the third. Well, low Kane, when he gets motoring, I mean, what is he, 21 miles an hour or whatever the heck he is. But when he came into third base, man, and Mike Jersey just started waving him. Well, now he slides into home plate. Now what we do in our minor leagues and our big leagues, our whole plan is that we don't check up in any bases. We always round the bag hard looking for the next 90 feet. So I got to give all the kudos in the world to Mike Jersey on that play because he had Lokane coming hard, and Lokane, because of the previous year, coming in hard in that situation, scored on that play easy.
I guess as a coach, you want to see those moments too where it takes, right? Like we've talked about this, and then to see it in action's got to be pretty rewarding.
Oh, it has to be, because if you don't have those moments and you don't put an asterisk by those moments and you don't show the players, tell the players, make it a point to celebrate those kind of situations, you know, you can work on things all day long, but until one guy does it and it works, then all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, this is right. Because what you want to do as a coach, you want to get the ear of the player. Okay, if you do this at some point in your career in the season, hopefully it's going to happen, it's going to work, and you're going to get rewarded just for energy and hustle and doing the right thing. And when that happens, I mean, we went through the whole season talking about the Batista play, talking about, well, and it wasn't the Batista play yet, but we were talking about not checking up in the bases. Well, you know, and every time that we did check up, as a coach, you're constantly pounding them about it, because that might have been the moment, that might have been the play, that might have been the run that we needed to win that game. And we went through the whole year, and we didn't have that play one time. And then we got into the playoffs against Toronto, and there it is.
Talk with Rusty Kuntz, Royals first base coach, here on 610 Sports Radio. Before we kind of wrap up this, I want to know what your favorite story of that 2015 season is, the one you'll always tell to everybody.
I think it's never happened, but I don't know if it's ever happened, but The one play is the first pitch of the World Series in 2015, and Escobar gets an inside-the-park home run. I mean, what a way to start off a World Series. First pitch of the game, Esky hits a fly ball into left center field. It goes off of Cespedes somehow, and it kicks into left field, and he's got to run this thing down, and you see Esky just running and running and running and running all the way to home plate, and you're going, my God, that was an inside-the-park home run on the first pitch of the game. And I don't know if I'll ever see that in my life ever again, because I don't even know if it's ever happened again. But there were so many great moments, though. I mean, you know, Alex Gordon hitting the ninth-inning home run off of Familia, who hadn't given up a run for a month. And Gordon takes him dead center field on a 1-1 pitch. And it was like, oh, my God, is this really going to roll? And sure enough, it does. You know, and then, of course, the guy that we call Clutch Cologne, you know, in 2014, he comes up in that wild card game and gets an infield single and scores the tying run, steals second base, and then Salvador comes up with that base hit down the third baseline, and Cologne scores the winning run. And then he comes up in the World Series, and he's got, you know, the moment, another moment that I always talk about too, is that you never know, your draft status never matters. Once you're drafted, you're a player. It doesn't matter if you go 1 or 50. And the example I always give is that, okay, now you're in the World Series, you got a tie ball game, and you're going to have Clutch Cologne come up, and he's going to go one ball, two strike count, and he's going to knock in a guy that just came in and pinch ran for Salvador, who hit that single down the right field line. Dyson comes in and pinch runs, and he steals second, and then Cologne hits a line drive rocket in the left center field to put us ahead. So you got a number one pick in Cologne driving in another a number 50 pick in Gerard Dyson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's never going to happen again. But Cologne, again, in the clutch, comes up with the big base hit, drives in the run, and, of course, Kane comes and puts the cherry on top with a three-run double off of Cologne later. But those are the ones that stand out the most to me. I mean, it's like those are moments that you dream about, but those are moments that when you come through like that, you know, it just puts you on a different planet for sure.
I think it was Danny Duffy that told us in recounting how great 14 and 15 was, it gives him the hunger to want to see that again. I'm guessing it's probably the same way for you and others that are still in this organization right now.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Because the personalities that we have on this club are genuine. They you know, there's a lot of similarities to them. They love one another. They pull for one another. They push one another. They hang out together. And then with this crop of new pitchers that are coming up and the guys that we have on this club right now, as far as our pitching staff, I mean, it's a great mix. It's a great combination, and our players, you know, they can't get enough of one another. I mean, they just have that inner action between them. They really, really, really are getting tired of losing, and they really, really, really want to do something special. That's why we got to get this thing up and running this year and get baseball on track again. Because we got a group of players right now that are hungry, and all they want to do is show people what they can do.
Rusty Kuntz, Royals first base coach, always brings a smile to your face.
It really does, doesn't it? Right. It's unbelievable.
He's ready for baseball to start as well. Latest installment of the Royals' five-year reunion. If you missed any of them, you can check them out at 610sports.com. Full page with all the links to all of our interviews. Royals first base coach, Rusty Kuntz, thanks for joining us today on the Royals' five-year reunion Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8:30.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
People are ready for hair that doesn't look like it was cut with a lawnmower, and workouts that don't involve two bags of flour. They're ready for a grand reopening, for small businesses to do what they've always done, get out there and power an economy. And Spectrum Business is proud to help with internet, voice, and TV services for free for 1 month when you switch. At Spectrum Business, we're here for you because you're here for all of us. Visit business.spectrum.com/reopen to learn more. Restrictions apply. Call for details.